estilo em tu médio óbvio. Hello, everybody, and welcome to tonight's stream. We are live on Rumble and we're live on Odyssey. I hope you can all hear me. I think we've now well and truly resolved all the audio issues that have been plaguing my streams for a couple of weeks after an update, which had decided to reset everything. Not only had it decided to reset everything, it had also dropped my audio levels down to 75%. Actually, I think it was 76%, which seems like a really odd number, doesn't it? It wasn't three quarters, it was 76%. But we are done with that. We believe we fixed it. I'm checking that it's still fixed, and I hope you can all hear me loud and clear. Because we've actually got a lot of interesting things to talk about tonight, despite it being ridiculously hot. And that might lead to me looking a little bit shiny throughout this stream, because I'm already... very, very warm in this office, I can tell you. Very warm indeed. And I'm actually a couple of minutes late. I don't know whether any of you got this, but just before I started the stream, my mobile phone, which was actually not at the side of me, but was in a different room, started going crazy with a noise that I can't remember hearing before. I'm sure I have heard it before, but I couldn't remember hearing it before. And I went into the other room thinking, what the hell's going on? And it was one of these weird government alerts which are forced through to every single smartphone. Did anyone else get that about wildfires? I was sort of a little bit shocked. I was sort of a bit, what the hell is going on? So I'm a couple of minutes late because I had to sort of do a wild goose chase looking for the pair of shorts that my phone was in the pocket of. Eventually, I found it. Found this thing, and now the phone is nestled at the side of me. Anyway, that's quite interesting, really, isn't it? We've got this issue with wildfires. I know there's been a few. I really hope there aren't any more, because it obviously affects the wildlife terribly, and we already have a lot of our indigenous wildlife rapidly being headed towards being endangered. So the last thing we need is wildfires getting rid of, you know, hedgehogs and newts and other animals that are already rare. So I urge everyone to be very, very careful. And look, we know who's going to start these, don't we? We know who's going to start these. He's talking about barbecues and fireworks and stuff. I'm not doing any barbecues or fireworks randomly in the woods or in a park at this time of year. You'd have to be a pretty scummy individual to do that. We know the sort of people who do that. It's not going to be people watching this show. Simple as that. Let's start there. Anyway, we've actually got a lot to talk about tonight. So we teed this up for the Clacton by-election, but there's a number of other things that have happened that I want to discuss. I want to discuss the horrific mother from Glasgow who basically killed her daughter with a hairdryer by just blowing so much hot air onto the child, it killed her. We're talking about that, not just because it's particularly gruesome or that I'm interested in, but this mother who did this, and she's not a young girl either, she's 28, got a very lenient sentence, and we're going to be comparing that with some people who've been sentenced for saying hurty words and doing things that the state doesn't like. That's very important to talk about. We're also going to talk about the case of Simon Levy. So a couple of really important things. And we'll also do a question and answer at the end. Anyway, I've been really busy this week, and there's a number of things you might want to check out. I did a very lengthy article, which unfortunately wasn't to people's liking for whatever reason and didn't get many shares and reads over on Substack. Nowhere near as much as I usually receive. That was about this black sex predator who the police allowed to operate with impunity. I thought that was going to be something that would really interest people. I thought it was going to interest people how many times he'd attacked, how many times he'd been let off, how the police just kept letting this guy get away with it. But for whatever reason, didn't strike a chord with people, did have a few thousand people read it, but usually my Substacks have been getting, one of my Substacks was shared everywhere and got over 250,000 views. So we're talking huge numbers here, and this one's back to sort of base level with my subscribers reading, but it's still out there if you want to read it, and we're going to do an update on it tonight. I also published a Substack today called Bullied to Death for Being White. It's a really horrific case. I've written about this before, but I did this far more in depth. It's about the case of Aaron Dugmore, a 9-year-old boy from Birmingham, who was transferred to a school that was 75% non-white. And he was bullied relentlessly for 5 weeks until he hanged himself. Now, that would be tragic enough, but it appears as if the state, the police, the school, and potentially, allegedly, even the coroner was involved in a massive cover-up. Now, I've not only written about this, but I've actually dismantled the state's arguments with genuine medical information, with psychological reports, and with other examples of bullying being covered up at schools. So this is something that you will want to read. I think it's a good article. And when I originally wrote about this, it was about a decade ago, and the article was about 1,300 words. This article's nearly 4,000 words, or maybe over 4,000 words, and goes really into depth in the case in a way I didn't do before. Quotes the coroner's report, pulls the coroner's report to pieces, talks about the psychology of child bullying. I've really gone into as much depth as I could without it being laborious, but it is there. It went live today, and it's free for anyone who wants to have a read of it. I really appreciate it when people share my Substack articles, especially when they share them to places like Facebook and Twitter that I don't have access to. So if you want to go and check that out, please do. Now, obviously, I'm here with you tonight. And if you like my work, if you like the work I've been doing, if you like all the things that I've been doing, please do consider making a small donation. We can accept donations through Rumble. It's really appreciated. And it's what keeps my head above water, keeps me doing this. And I have been very busy recently, not only with the articles I've been putting out, but also with other work. And if you have seen on my Telegram, on the Telegram of Patriotic Alternative, and on the official PA site, there is footage of the speeches from the Tamworth demo, including my speech that went up today, and I'll be sharing that after this show. So if you like everything that I've been doing, please do consider giving a donation. If you can't donate tonight, I understand that. Please do consider, though, giving something either on Substack, subscribe to me. It's only $10 a month. It means a great deal if you can do that. And finally, if also you can do that via crypto, because I do accept crypto donations. If you don't want to donate via Rumble, or you don't want to use your card for whatever reason. Anyway, there's lots of ways to donate, but please make sure you do, because it means a great deal. And obviously, I can't do this without people's generosity. And I am working extremely hard this week. I think this is my 1, 2, 3, 4. This is my 4th or 5th stream already this week. And obviously I've had 2 Substack articles out as well. Anyway, let's get into tonight's show, and we'll talk first of all about the Clacton by-election. The Clacton by-election has now come and gone, and Nigel Farage won it with ease. In fact, he took nearly 2/3 of the vote, which is pretty incredible. I think it took 63% was the exact figure. Well, actually, I think it was 63.3%. He did very well. Now, some people say, well, the other main parties didn't stand. That's why he did as well as he did. But it was interesting in the lead up to the election, because literally every one of his enemies was building up Count Binface and attacking him. Kemi Badenoch sent a letter to all the constituents in Clacton telling them how awful Nigel Farage was. And even the Daily Mail, which is sort of the right-wing tabloid of choice, did an article attacking him, which I thought was very, very interesting, because it goes to show that they are firmly in the camp, in the Conservatives' camp. They're bigging up Kemi Badenoch. The Daily Mail are a massively important part of the establishment. And they constantly rail against mass immigration. They constantly talk about illegal immigration. They constantly talk about issues that we would talk about. But every time it comes to proposing a solution, it's always to give the Conservatives one more chance. And recently, they've been really, really building up Kemi Badenoch. They've been saying that she's going to be the only person that can save Britain. And they've been tearing down Nigel Farage. Now, Nigel Farage is far from perfect. And, you know, as a person, he's not our guy. But he's infinitely better than Kemi Badenoch. But this is what they had to say in the run-up to this election. This was the day before the election. The public back bin face, but Farage only likely to extend his majority as Clacton goes to the polls in farcical by-election that sees 34 on the ballot sheet. Now, that's important because the ballot paper had 34 different candidates on it, making it the biggest by-election ever, the biggest by-election in British history by number of candidates, the biggest by-election in British history by total number of voters eligible to vote, interestingly, was just a few weeks earlier, which was the Greater Manchester mayoral election. So weird that we've seen two by-elections back to back, and both of them have been the biggest in history for different reasons. But I found this article quite interesting because of the attack on Nigel Farage. Anyway, I'll go ahead and read it. The public are rooting for Count Binface to beat Nigel Farage in Thursday's by-election in Clacton, recent survey results reveal. As the people of Clacton head to the polls, 37% of Britons want Count Binface to be elected MP, with just 32% backing Mr. Farage. Now, obviously, this is a massive load of nonsense, really, isn't it? Farage won the election easily, but apparently everyone was backing Count Binface. And Ladbrokes gave Mr. Farage a 99% chance of being elected, while betting platform Star Sports is set to pay out more than £60,000 if Count Binface wins. While more than half of Labour, Lib Dem and Green voters want Count Binface to triumph in Clacton, 9 in 10 Reform voters and the majority of half of Conservative voters are willing Mr. Farage to succeed, according to the polling research for More in Common. And Mr. Farage looks like to extend his majority, with polling firm Servation predicting him to hoover up nearly three quarters of the vote in Clacton. So weird that one minute they're saying everyone wants Binface to win, but then they're saying he's going to get three quarters of the vote. Here's Binface. I don't know why nationalists think it would be funny if this guy won. He's a guy who writes comedies for the BBC. You know exactly what this guy's political leanings are. He is going to be absolutely awful. But this was all to make a bit of a mockery of Farage. And it's quite interesting because there were 34 candidates. You can see them all here. Lawrence Fox, one of the idiots who stood. Some of them don't even have pictures for obvious reasons because there's just sort of too many of them. But let's see what the comments say. The best rated comment, let's have a look. The public do not back Binface. Why does this paper loathe Farage so much? I'll give that an upvote. This is very, very interesting comment, though, because the article says everyone's backing Binface, only to admit that Farage was the overwhelming favourite. And you can see here in the comments, people are sick of it, but this is firmly an establishment publication. And you can see here something is going on. In fact, the second comment is quite interesting. He said, I would have thought that candidates are required to use their actual legal name on the election ballot. That's a good point. Binface and the other garbage put up and promoted by the left-wing media. Don't let them destroy Britain to keep Labour and the left-wing in power. So most people here seem to be obviously supporting Farage, but the Daily Mail isn't. So it seems Daily Mail readers are finally onto the fact that that rag is nothing more than an establishment mouthpiece. But interestingly, we saw this in the run-up to this election. Everyone seemed to be supporting Count Binface and tearing Nigel Farage down. And I think this is all part of their push to reestablish the two-party system. They want things to go back to Labour and Tories. They want Farage to be humiliated. And you've got to remember, all of this came about due to some standards committee hearing, because Nigel Farage got a £5 million crypto donation before he was elected, and apparently he should have declared that. Now, Farage said it was not a political donation. It was a one-off lifetime gift for him to pay for his security. Now, I'm not shilling for Nigel Farage, but I will say this. That does sound very legitimate to me, and I'll tell you why. Nigel Farage has been repeatedly attacked in the street. He's had milkshakes thrown over him. He's had BBC comedians state that those milkshakes would have been better if they were acid. I mean, can you imagine if I did a show and suggested that a corrosive substance should be thrown over someone? I would be arrested and jailed, and rightfully so, because if you're actually calling for people to go out and throw corrosive substances in the face of others, that's a pretty scummy thing to do. That's not good, is it? But that's what happened with Nigel Farage. I believe it was Joe Brand. I'm sure the chat will correct me if I'm making a mistake here, but I believe it was BBC comedian Joe Brand, this giant fat hog creature. And she made this joke about throwing acid in Nigel Farage's face, and she wasn't arrested. Nothing was done about it, because obviously when the left do this, it's all just jokes. But then we saw the brutal murder of Anne Widdecombe, who was beaten to death by some left-wing crank who drove hundreds and hundreds of miles to her house, beat her to death brutally with a hammer. Absolutely shocking stuff, absolutely sickening, stomach-churning murder. The police first lied and said it was just an isolated incident and it wasn't politically motivated. Absolute lies. Eventually, Reform got onto the fact that it was a murder motivated by politics, and they had to actually provide additional security for their own members, leaders and officials, out of their own money. So I'm not shilling for Nigel Farage, but if anyone needs money for his own protection, it's him. He is regularly painted as a target. The left regularly get away with saying that he deserves a horrible fate, whether it's acid being thrown in his face or other forms of violence. He has repeatedly been attacked. In fact, he couldn't attend the count last night because of a threat to his person. And we do know that left-wing nuts have killed leading Reform spokespeople, and then the police have tried to cover it up. So again, I'm not saying I'm on his side, but I'm just trying to be as objective as I can about this. Anyway, what we know is that the election has now been and gone, and the results are in. So let's go through the results. And I've got to say this, but some of these results are absolutely shocking. We'll start at the top. I believe the turnout, that should be at the bottom. Turnout was 44%, down 13.6%. So about in line for a parliamentary by-election. Not a bad turnout, not particularly low. Didn't drop under 40%. So for a parliamentary by-election, that is completely reasonable. It's a lot better than the Greater Manchester mayoral by-election, which I believe the turnout was only 25%, so a reasonably high turnout. So not only did he win, but it seems a reasonable amount of people were willing to turn out. Nigel Farage got 22,239 votes, 63.34%, and his percentage went up by 17.1%. So he obviously did all of this as sort of some kind of, barometer of whether the public supported him. And from this, you can see they did. That's, of course, what happened. Account Binface came second with nearly 27%, taking 9,455 votes, 26.93%. Now, this is something that tells you a lot about the state of all the other candidates listed below. Now, if you remember, when this election was announced, I called it a circus. And I was actually quite surprised when Tendring District Council didn't list all the candidates' names within hours of the nominations closing. I was quite annoyed about that. And, you know, at first I was like, aren't they doing their job properly? And then when it turned out there was 34 candidates, I was like, yeah, we probably need to give them a bit of slack, because dealing with all of this must have been very difficult. It must have been difficult. And, you know, to process 34 separate candidates, make sure the paperwork's in order, make sure all the deposits went through, that would have been lengthy. So, I mean, really, I can't knock them. But then it gets very interesting. Rejoin EU, who are a joke candidate, came third. And the vote drop is absolutely massive. We're right down here to less than 500 votes and 1.4%. So you have to pay £500 to stand in a parliamentary election. It's called a deposit. Now, you get your deposit back if you take over 5% of the vote. 34 candidates, and 32 of them didn't get their deposit back. The third place, Rejoin EU, who are usually a joke party that are lucky if they break three figures, you know, came in third with 1.4%, and it gets worse from here. An independent, Tony Francis, fourth, 1.23. Pamela Walford, 1.06. So the top five candidates all got over 1%. And from there on, the next 29 candidates all failed to take a single percent. I mean, this is a wonderful example of how farcical these elections can be. In sixth place is Reclaim with Lauren Fox. He's an egotistical tit. He got less than 1%. Then the Social Democratic Party, 0.73%. Then an independent, 0.58%. The Consensus Party, never heard of them until this election, 0.55%. An independent, 0.45%. And then we get the British Democrats, Kai Stevens, a.k.a. Barclay Walsh, 132 votes, 0.38%. I mean, it's embarrassing. I warned before this, that no nationalist should take part in this, because the result would be humiliating. And it is. Because here you have 30 candidates that were comprehensively beaten by Count Binface. And because of the way this election was always going to play out, and I warned people about this, I said, this is how this is going to play out. This was basically a big trap. They wanted Farage to be beaten by Binface. And if they couldn't achieve that, they wanted to suck in as many small radical parties to humiliate them. And that's what they've done. The next candidate, another independent, 0.36, another independent, 0.28, and it keeps going further and further down. Unfortunately, did he pull out in the end? Because there was, I was sure at one point, Jeremy Corbyn's brother was going to stand in this election, but it doesn't appear that he did in the end. It appears he pulled out, which is a good thing, because I like him. He's been on my show, and fortunately he didn't take part in this, which is good, because it would have been very, very humiliating. But then you get down to the under 100 votes, and you can see a sizable number of the candidates failed to take 100 votes. And when you get down to the very bottom, you have three candidates who take less than 10 votes. Now, this is incredible because you have to have 10 people sign your paperwork to allow you to stand. So you may yourself not live within the constituency. That's completely normal. But one would expect the people who signed your paperwork to propose you as a candidate would actually go out and vote for you. Well, we have three people here: Jerry Smith, Woke Trump Kazi, and Glenn Cummings, who all failed to motivate the people who signed for them to go out and vote for them. I mean, this is absolutely insane. Now, I did look up earlier what the lowest ever single vote was in a parliamentary election. And that occurred in the UK general election on May the 5th, 2005. And this result was achieved by Catherine Taylor Dawson, who stood as a candidate for the Vote for Yourself Rainbow Dream Ticket Party in the constituency of Cardiff North. She didn't vote for herself because she didn't live in the constituency, and she took one vote. She took a single vote, one. That's the lowest in British electoral history. But what you can see here is these guys weren't far off. And once you tip under those 10 votes, it's time to call it a day. But I would say for everyone here except for Farage and Binface, it's time to call it a day. This is an absolute humiliation. And look, I don't want to get into a big thing about the British Democrats. I know some people who are in the British Democrats. There are good people in that organization. Some of them are very nice. Some of them I've known since I was in my sort of mid-20s. So I've known some of these people for two decades, some maybe more. But what I'll say is this: for seasoned veteran nationalists of a party that was formed originally in 2011 to be sucked into this embarrassing spectacle shows that certain people within nationalism simply do not learn. They don't learn. They don't take on board what's happened in the past. They haven't learned from mistakes of the past. I remember there was a period around 2016, where every time there was a by-election, you would have the British Democrats, sometimes the National Front, the English Democrats, a slew of other parties, what was left of UKIP at the time. All of these parties would come together. They would all duke it out. Most of them, if not all of them, would get less than 5% and lose their deposits. You would also have some sort of Britain First would stand at that time. There would also be sort of little offshoot parties, nationalist independent. It was a disaster. And this happened again and again. And I thought people had genuinely learned from that period. But seeing the British Democrats on the ballot paper, I've got to say, I don't want to rubbish them or tell people not to get involved. I'm certainly not going to slag off the people running the party, because as I said, some of them are people I know and speak to regularly. But this was a disastrous choice. And really, the only two people to benefit from this in any way were Farage and Binface. Farage has basically proved that the people of Clacton want him. He's given people a referendum on whether they support him or not. He won that referendum. And Binface, for better or for worse, showed that people will get behind him to try and rubbish a supposed anti-immigration candidate. That tells you a lot about the Labour, Lib Dem, maybe even Tory voters who voted for him, and the fact that Daily Mail was pushing him. This is very interesting, but it does show there are 32 candidates there who did nothing but humiliate themselves. If you're coming out of a parliamentary election and you're failing to save your deposit, or worse still, if you are so far away from saving your deposit that you're under 1% of the vote, I'm sorry, guys, it's time to call it a day. Less than 1% of the vote is humiliating. And this was a relatively low turnout because it was only a parliamentary by-election, 44%. Reasonable turnout for a by-election, but you've got to remember, usually a parliamentary election would have a turnout between 60 to 65%. Imagine how bad this would have been for those candidates then. Very, very unfortunate. And it really just underscores what I've said about these nationalist micro parties and the fact that they're almost addicted to humiliating themselves. Anyway, that really wraps up what I want to say about this by-election, but there are other things I want to discuss tonight. And also, we will do a question and answer at the end if people want to do one. I might take some free questions as well, so if you want to stick around for that, that's great. And if you'd like to make a donation, I'd really appreciate that. Obviously, if people want to support my work, I'm always happy. That. We're going to move on, though, to an important story now. This, again, covered in the Daily Mail, and this leads into something else I want to talk about. But here we go. I'm just going to bring this up so you can see it. Mother 28, who burned her baby to death with a hairdryer after a night of partying, is jailed for just 6 weeks after judge ruled she didn't intend to harm or kill her. Let's have a look about this. Let's have a look. A mother who killed her baby daughter with heat from a hairdryer after a night out partying has been jailed for just 6 years. Courtney Gartshaw, 28, used the appliance to subject three-year-old Dahlia Rose Gartshaw to significant and sustained heat at an address in Peterhead, Aberdeenshire in September 2023. Dahlia Rose suffered burns to approximately 18% of her body surface, particularly to her head, neck, upper body and one of her arms. The injuries were so severe that a paramedic thought her body was decomposing, and experts said they had never encountered a similar case. Gartshaw was convicted of culpable homicide following a trial at the High Court in Aberdeen in July. Sentencing at the High Court in Edinburgh today, Judge Simon Collins, KC, ruled that while Gartshaw had not intended to harm or kill her baby, she was culpable in the highest degree of carelessness. I don't know how you can not be intending to harm somebody doing that. He added that it should have been obvious that Dahlia Rose was in severe distress and pain. You will have to live the rest of your life with the knowledge that you're responsible for her death, he said. This was a gross breach of the most basic duty as a parent. Judge Collins said Dahlia Rose is likely cause of death with hypothermia and heat stroke. I mean, this is heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking. Here's this stupid cow. I mean, talk about red flags. A defence lawyer, Murray Makara, said she could not provide a reasonable or compelling explanation for why she used the hairdryer, but speculated that the baby was cold and she may have attempted to recklessly use it as a source of heat. Gartshaw denied the charges and told family and friends her daughter had died of sudden infant death syndrome. Jurors also held a recording of a 999 call the mother made in which she said Dahlia Rose had gone purple while sleeping. The only witness called in Gartshaw's defence, a burns expert, Timothy Burge, told jurors the baby was not killed by heat injuries in his view. It could have been that she was already dead, he said. However, it took the jury just over an hour, that's a very, very short deliberation, to return a unanimous guilty verdict. The court previously heard the baby's DNA was found on the hairdryer and the mother and daughter were the only people in the property at the time of the incident. CCTV footage showed Gartshaw arriving after drinking with friends at around 4 a.m. She dialed 999 at about 9:40 a.m., claiming she'd woken up to find her baby dead but did not mention the hairdryer. Gartshaw's solicitor, Murray Makara, said she suffered with mental health. Of course. Mental health issues. Following a conviction, Detective Inspector James Callender said children are defenseless and should be protected. The death of any child is particularly harrowing, but a child's death at the hands of a parent is incredibly disturbing. Everyone involved in this investigation was deeply affected, blah, blah, blah. He wants to express severe thanks. So there you go. And let's have a look at the comments, because we should always do that. I'll make them a bit bigger so you can see them. 6 years, 6 years for the life of this beautiful baby girl. Soft justice at play in the UK once again. That poor innocent baby, 6 years, where is the justice? Appalling behaviour and even worse sentence. What is the world coming to? Parents more interested in selfies than growing up. I mean, somebody's made a very good point here. That intense heat over a prolonged time period, and she didn't mean to do it. The poor child must have been screaming its head off. Well, yeah, you know, what do I think happened? Well, I wasn't there, so I obviously don't know. But I think the mother was obviously off her head, doing something stupid, maybe even turned the hairdryer on to warm the baby up and fell to sleep or passed out, and the baby just, you know, obviously helpless, couldn't move. Absolutely horrific story. But why am I talking about this? I'm talking about this because I want to compare and contrast. Now, I know that took place in Scotland and this is in England. There's different legal systems. But I do think we do need to compare and contrast this because it is very important. So here we go. A man jailed for encouraging violent disorder and criminal damage. A man has been jailed for 7.5 years after encouraging his followers online to commit violent disorder and criminal damage in Southport. Andrew Robert McIntyre, 39, from Cousins Lane, Rufford, sent messages via Telegram encouraging others to participate in the disorder in Southport on the 30th of July 2024, as well as failed attempts to instigate disorder at other locations. He used an account called Southport Wake Up as a forum to incite people to take to the streets to participate in violent disorder and property damage. McIntyre also attended the disorder in Southport on the 30th of July and in Liverpool on the 3rd of August. When he was arrested on the 8th of August on Smithdown Road, McIntyre was found in possession of a flick knife. McIntyre appeared at Liverpool Crown Court today, Monday the 6th of January, to plead, obviously this is some time ago, after pleading guilty to encouraging violent disorder and criminal damage and possession of a bladed article in public place. Detective Inspector Paula Jones said the actions of the people who took part in the disorder in Southport had a huge impact on a community still grieving the harrowing events of July the 29th. McIntyre played a key role in coordinating the group who took to the streets on the 30th of July using social media to encourage members of the group to turn up at the heart of the communities in Southport and Liverpool to commit criminal damage. The result left dozens of officers injured as bricks and bins and other missiles were thrown at them. None of them were dead, though. And they certainly weren't dead because they were roasted by a hairdryer. Residence walls were dismantled to create makeshift missiles and their bins set alight while windows were smashed and a trail of destruction left in their wake. Those who took part in the disorder, many of whom will have seen McIntyre's messages, 163 have been arrested, 121 charged, now 90 have been sentenced to a total of 189 years and 10 months. Like dozens of other before him, I hope McIntyre spends the time he will now have in prison reflecting on his actions during this disorder and the impact it had on communities here in Merseyside. Well, there you have it. I'm certainly not saying anyone should go and encourage violent disorder. I'm certainly not saying anyone should throw bricks at the police. And I'm certainly not saying that anybody should involve themselves in any kind of violence like that. And look, here we go. The fact is, whatever you think, killing a baby is far worse than encouraging people to go out and get involved in disorder with the police. Simple as that. There's no two ways to cut it, but we are living in modern, liberal, progressive, tolerant, multicultural Britain. And this is the outcome. This is the kind of outcome you expect. Some feckless, worthless, disgusting excuse for a mother gets 6 years after killing a beautiful, helpless baby. And then a man who is obviously incensed, does the wrong thing, but possibly for the right reasons, gets jailed for 7.5 years. This is justice turned on its head. And I personally find this sickening, but I don't find it unexpected. I find this kind of outcome what I would expect. I'd say this is par for the course. And to be completely honest, it doesn't surprise me. It still annoys me, but it doesn't surprise me. Anyway, obviously, I'll take questions at the end. We've already had a super chat. If people want to super chat, please consider giving something, and I'll answer the questions at the end. I might also do some free questions if people would like me to, because the show will be over probably about the next 10, 15 minutes. But the last thing I wanted to report on before anyone, and also if anyone sees any other news items that I've missed this week, please do shout it out in the chat, because I would obviously be more than willing to throw in extra news items if people want me to. Anyway, the last thing I want to talk about is the case of Simon Levy. I'm going to bring up a picture of him so people can see what this guy looks like, because he is an absolute monstrosity. And I want to show people, this is the guy that was walking around with impunity. This is the guy who was assaulting women on the tube. I mean, he's absolutely monstrous. Like, when you see this guy, he's just absolutely hideous. But he's also very noticeable, isn't he? Like, how this guy kept getting away with this is incredible. But I discuss all this in my article about him. But let's read the sentencing remarks, because he has been sentenced to a full life tariff. And we've discussed full life tariffs on this show before, but we're going to have a look at this. We're going to go through this. These are the sentencing remarks. And obviously, I'm going to read these in full and talk about them. They're only 9 pages, so it's not going to be too long. Number one, the provisions of the Sexual Offences Amendment Act 1992 apply to the offences concerning one of the victims here, who I'll refer to as ED. He basically, Simon Levy, killed 2 women, but there was one, which in my article, I said it was attempted murder. He was never charged with attempted murder, but he broke her collarbone, brutally beat her, and suffocated her and forced his hand down her throat. Now, I would say he was attempting to kill her, but he thankfully didn't kill her. Now, interestingly, when the police actually arrested her because she was a sex worker, and when she was arrested by the police, she said, look, this happened to me, and it was this guy, and I've seen him around. You need to arrest him. I'm in agony. I've got a broken collarbone, etc. But the police didn't take it seriously. The police kept letting him go, basically, because he was a disabled man. They said he's a disabled man, but I'm sure it's because he was a disabled black man. You know how it works. Anyway, because she survived, her name hasn't been made public, probably because she's a sex worker and also because victims are anonymous, she's just going to be referred to as ED. So under those provisions where an allegation has been made that a sexual offence has been committed against a person, no matter relating to that person, shall during the person's lifetime be included in any publication if it's likely to lead to members of the public to identify the person as a victim of that offence. This prohibition applies unless waived or lifted in accordance with Section 3 of the Act. For the avoidance of any doubt, there has been no waiver or lifting of this prohibition. So we're going to call her ED. I hope she rebuilds her life. I hope she gets away from the sex work. And I hope she fully heals after what this monster did to her. Last Friday, the 7th of August, 2026. Oh, and when I said earlier, one of the reasons they probably haven't named her is because she's a sex worker. What I meant to say is one of the reasons she probably hasn't come forward is because she's a sex worker. Many people who are victims of sexual attacks that do have the right to anonymity waive that right to speak to the press and to discuss the issue. But anyway, she hasn't, but I hope she gets better and fixes her life. Anyway, last Friday, the 7th of August, 2026, you were convicted of 2 counts of rape, causing grievous bodily harm with intent, intentional suffocation, and 2 murders. And I must now sentence you. The offences reflect a series of attacks by you upon vulnerable women who either undertook sex work or who, by reason of drug addiction, would sometimes perform sexual services for money or drugs. In 2025, you embarked on a series of attacks on these women, each in a similar way. You are clearly someone who ruthlessly exploits others for your own personal sexual satisfaction. In January 2025, you attacked and raped ED in the course of attacking and raping her vaginally and anally. Now, I'll finish the point. You fractured her right shoulder and strangled her to such an extent she became unconscious. Now, I didn't actually cover this in my article, and I might go back and edit that article. I didn't know how bad this was because the sentencing remarks hadn't been released. I knew he raped her. I didn't know the extent of that rape. It's worse than the press told us. Anyway, on the 25th of January 2025, ED was arrested for breaching a community protection notice. At the time, she was on 4th Street, Edmonton. She told the police officer she was on her way to hospital because she had sustained an injury to her shoulder during an attack. She showed police her shoulder and it appeared to be red and swollen, and that she was in visible pain. While speaking to the police, she told them she had been raped early in the week. She was tearful as she sought to explain what happened. She said that it had happened in the B&M car park on 4th Street, and she told them her attacker was a black African male who lived in White Hart Lane. She knew where her attacker lived, but did not know their name. The description she provided as to where the male who assaulted her lived was recorded on body-worn video. It is obvious she was referring to you, but the police didn't do anything. At hospital, it was noted that ED had a fractured clavicle. As ED was withdrawing from heroin, she was not well enough to speak to the police in more detail as to what happened. The police made efforts to trace her over the coming months. Despite making contact with her on a number of occasions, ED did not wish to talk about what happened to her. She gave a full account of the attack on the 6th of September 2025, and the account she gave is clear the attack on her was a violent one and that she feared she may not survive. Dr. Afire explained the injury to the clavicle was a displaced fracture and that such an injury would have necessitated a degree of force. That's quite interesting because the media reported that the police did not follow it up. The judge is saying something very different here. The police—it was actually reported in the media that the police did not follow this up, and the police discounted the evidence she gave because she mixed up a couple of the dates, and due to those minor discrepancies, they basically refused to take it any further. But there's two different stories there. On the 16th of March 2025, you met with Comenza Valencia Trujillo. That's probably butchering the pronunciation. Trujillo. That's probably better. Comenza left her home address just before 6 a.m. that morning. There is CCTV footage of her relatively close to Wendover or Wendover House on Thurlow Street, SE17. In the afternoon of 16th of March, she was seen on CCTV walking alongside Wendover. At 3.07 p.m., Comenza is seen on CCTV walking on the Old Kent Road and then again at 3.18 p.m. and 3.20 p.m. This is the last sighting of Comenza alive. Where she was seen is relatively close to Wendover, where she must have gone. Just 10 minutes later, you are seen on the Old Kent Road, albeit walking in the opposite direction to Comenza. However, at 3.34 p.m., you are seen again on the Old Kent Road, coming back the other way and in the same direction as Comenza. At 6.23 p.m., you can be seen again on CCTV on Thurlow Street. At 6.52 p.m., you go into Elephant and Castle Underground Station and return to North London. To make that journey, you used an Oyster card in the name of a bus operator and exited Seven Sisters Station at 7.27 p.m. That's a key piece of evidence there. He was using a stolen Oyster card. The police never took it off him, regardless of how many times they arrested him. About 24 hours later, just before 7 p.m., on 17th of March 2025, a 999 call was made and the police alerted to an unresponsive female who'd been found in the stairwell at Wendover House. Comenza was found lying face down on a flat landing area in the middle of a flight of stairs, 90 degrees from the direction of the last step. From a short distance away, there were signs of injuries to her face, with a small amount of blood on her face on the concrete floor next to her face. The legs were straight and closed together, not obviously splayed or flexed at the hip or knee joint. She was wearing a jacket and several layers of clothing. Her trouser bottoms were not fully pulled up. Whilst the post-mortem examination could not give a cause of death for Comenza, the pathologist noted numerous injuries, some of which were recent and were to the head, neck and torso, upper and lower limbs. The face and upper neck were red and congested, and the neck, eyes and mouth had, I can't pronounce that word, a hemorrhage. There were also bruising to the neck. The toxicology revealed that Comenza had taken cocaine. During the scene examination of the staircase, an area of dry, red blood-like substance was seen on the silver pipe on the far right-hand corner of the landing area between the floor 8 and floor 7. Examination confirmed DNA from the blood matched your DNA, something that had caused you to bleed where Comenza was killed. Forensic examinations revealed DNA from semen matching yours was present on swabs taken for Comenza's lower buttocks and rectum. So he anally raped her as well. On the 1st of April 2025, you were arrested and interviewed about the murder of Comenza. When spoken to, you made no comment responses to all questions asked. On the 24th of August 2025, just after midnight, so the police let him go again. On the 24th of August 2025, just after midnight, you met with Cheryl Wilkins. This was on the High Street in Tottenham. The two of you are seen on CCTV to cross the high road and go to the area where the attacks in January had taken place, the area of the car park of the B&M store. You go with Cheryl behind a wall and you're so far away from direct CCTV footage. Some 50 minutes later, you emerge and leave the area where Cheryl's body is found by police some hours later. The position in which Cheryl's body was left in strikingly similar position to that which Carmenza's was left in at Wendover back in March. Cheryl's body had no fewer than 83 areas of injury or marks. There were a number of marks and injuries to the face and head. front and back of the upper body and arms and legs. All of those marks from a pathological perspective are minor. As with Carmenza, the pathologist was not able to give a cause of death. Some of the injuries were not caused on the evening in question, but some plainly were. The toxicology revealed that Cheryl had taken some controlled drugs before death. She had a past medical history that included abusing cocaine, heroin and cannabis. She had been prescribed methadone. Cheryl was only 39 years of age. Despite having a history of drug use, she was found dead, lying face down, just as Carmenza was. As I have mentioned, there was a striking similarity between the deaths of Carmenza and Cheryl. You had sexual interaction with them both, and both are then found dead in an almost identical position. This is deeply troubling when seen alongside the account ED gave as to the attack on her. This troubling concern is even more stark when all three are seen together with the material found on your phone and computers that displays a clear interest in sex, and in particular sexual intercourse from behind, rape and crime. You kept files of material which included the following: my sex records, sex positions, my favourite, my sex drive advice, sex and submission. You are someone who appears to have a morbid fascination with sex, rape and crime. In addition to what was found on your mobile telephone and other electronic devices at your home, the police recovered an array of press cuttings which reveal a long-standing fascination with sex, sexual offences and particularly rape. You have significant convictions for sexual offences upon women. On the 30th September 2021, you were convicted following a trial of sexual assault committed on the 29th of July 2018 and sexual assault by penetration committed on 26th of August 2018. So he's a long-time offender. Even closer in time to the offences, you were convicted on the 5th of February 2026 of a series of sexual assaults on different women. There were some 11 sexual assaults between April 2022 and May 2025, six of those offences occurring in the first 5 months of 2025 and so overlapping with the offences in the indictment here. When arrested in 4th of September 2025, you claimed you had done nothing. In an interview on the 5th of September, you gave a prepared statement denying the offences in January and August of 2025. You claimed that Cheryl Wilkins had injuries on her body before he had sex, and yet a viewing of images of her body shows that was not the case. When ED gave evidence, it was suggested to her that all sexual contact was consensual. As ED made clear, you simply took advantage of her and were violent in doing so. You chose not to give evidence at trial, so I have proffered no real explanation for what happened to Carmenza or to Cheryl. You are now aged 40, date of birth 14th of August 1985. In terms of other previous convictions, in April 2012, you were fined for handling stolen goods, and in September 2021, you received a total of 36 months for the offences of sexual assault by penetration and the sexual assault I have just referred to. That's incredible. You got only 3 years for two counts of sexual assault. In June of this year, you were sentenced in the Crown Court of Inner London for the 11 sexual offences carried out by you between April 2022 and May 2025. The sentence imposed was an extended sentence of 9 years with a custodial term of 6 years and an extended licence of 3. As the sentencing judge noted in dealing with you, then your conduct revealed a deliberate, persistent and carefully orchestrated campaign of targeted assault on women by you over a 3-year period. Your attack on women in this indictment, beginning with a sexual assault upon a prison officer after you were sentenced for the offences in 2018. I have read the pre-sentence report that was prepared for you for the proceedings before the Crown Court in London. Now, this is really important. He actually was released early from prison, despite the fact he sexually assaulted a female prison officer during his time in prison. I mean, that tells you everything, doesn't it? Victim impact. I have seen and read a statement from ED. It and various other statements have been read in court as part of the sentencing hearing. With ED, it takes considerable courage to come to court and give evidence, as she did, and I thank her for doing so. I know it was far from easy, but she should be commended for doing so. She is a classical pianist and loves music. Music makes her feel alive. She speaks about you taking away her soul and her dignity. I also note that she says she is stronger today than before and that she will play music again and smile. I sincerely hope so. Carmenza's daughter speaks of the devastating impact on her, her brother and the whole family of Carmenza's murder. She speaks of the mental, psychological, physical, emotional and financial impact there has been. Nazli says that her mother came to the UK to give her children a better life and for safety, and yet her life was taken so cruelly by you. Carmenza had recently become a grandmother and was planning for her grandson's future. There are also moving statements from Cheryl Wilkins's family. Cheryl was killed the day before what would have been her 40th birthday. Cheryl had four children, and so they have all lost their mother. The statements speak of emotional pain, of Cheryl's death, the shattering impact on the family of what you have subjected Cheryl to. Her sister speaks of the destruction to their lives as a result of your actions, the mental and physical torment they have all felt. Alongside the grief caused by losing Cheryl, as I think that's meant to say, her mother says they will keep alive through their memories and the stories that they will tell their children. Sentencing provisions. The sentence for murder is fixed by law. It must be life imprisonment. The first issue for me is to decide on whether there should be a minimum term set or whether this is a case where there should be a whole life order. In considering Schedule 21 of the Sentencing Act 2020, paragraph 2.1 makes clear that if A, the court considers that the circumstances of the offence or the combination of the offence and one or more offences associated with it is exceptionally high, and B, the offender was aged 21 or over when the offence was committed, the appropriate starting point is a whole life order. As paragraph 2.2 sets out, cases that would normally fall within subparagraph 2.1 include murder or two or more persons where each murder involves sexual conduct. In considering whether this is the case that is within that category of exceptionally high, I have considered decisions of the Court of Appeal in Stewart 2022, EWCA Crim. I'm acutely aware that whole life sentences are sentences that should be considered for rare cases. On your behalf, it is submitted that the case is not one that should be met with a whole life term. Ms. Gray seeks to distinguish the fact of sexual contact from any pathological evidence of sexual injury or sexual depravity. She has referred to the decision of the Court of Appeal. It is submitted that the case should be considered as coming within paragraph 3 of Schedule 21 and a start point of 30 years. Ms. Gray concedes that I am with her on this start point. A minimum period substantially above 30 years starting point would be appropriate. On this issue, I have also been referred to the decision of the Court of Appeal in Attorney General's reference numbers George and Walters. In my judgment, both murders were committed by you during or after you had sexual intercourse with each woman. I note that no money was found in possession of either Carmenza or Cheryl. Counts 1 and 2 are two rapes on a third woman who not only sustained grievous bodily harm, but was strangled and made unconscious as a result in the course of the rapes. Equally, I'm satisfied on the evidence that compression of the neck or impeding of the breathing of breath of Carmenza and Cheryl is very likely to have taken place in the course of your attacks on each of them. In my judgment, this case is one that comes within paragraph 2 of Schedule 21, and the starting point has to be a whole life order. Turning next to assess the aggravating and mitigating factors, this will be interesting, and being mindful of matters taken into account in the choice of starting point. Firstly, I note that the murders occurred on separate occasions. Secondly, both murders involved a degree of premeditation or planning. On this point, I also note what happened to ED. With Carmenza, you travelled to southeast London into an area where you must have known you would encounter someone willing to have sex with you on the premise of money before then murdering Carmenza. You then sought out Cheryl in an area known to be one where sex workers operated and where you had found and attacked ED in January. Thirdly, the murder of Cheryl Wilkins was committed whilst you were on court bail in respect of sexual offences committed on public transport. Fourthly, the murder of Cheryl was committed at a time when you had been interviewed in respect of the murder of Carmenza and released under investigation in respect of that offence. Fifthly, the seriousness of all of the offending in relation to ED. Sixthly, your previous convictions from September 2021 for sexual offending before any of the offences I am dealing with. This guy had an immense criminal history, and as you heard there, he was basically allowed to operate with impunity. This guy just kept going out and raping and attacking women, regardless of the number of times he was arrested. And at one time, he was actually on police bail, refusing to attend a court hearings, and still went on to murder his third victim. Anyway, let's have a look at the mitigating factors. As for the mitigating factors, I do not find this to be the case in which there was an intention falling short of an intention to kill. And even if that was the position in my judgment, it makes no material difference here. There do not appear to be any other mitigating factors present. Although you had the assistance of an intermediary at trial on a few occasions, there is nothing I have seen on which it can be said that your culpability has been reduced in respect to any of the offences here. I have seen and read reports on you dealing with a language development disorder. While I accept that condition, along with the sight loss you have had since May 2024, will impact on your daily life in prison, they have little, if any, impact on the sentence to be imposed. Well, this is actually a judge who pretty much said what needed to be said for once. Sentence, Simon Levy, you violently attacked, raped ED in January 2025, and then in March 2025, you murdered Carmenza, and then in September 25, you murdered Cheryl Wilkins. You ruthlessly exploited and took advantage of each of those three women for your own personal sexual gratification. When you left ED, she was clearly unconscious. She survived your physical and sexual attack. Sadly, Carmenza and Cheryl lost their lives to your actions. In my judgment, the aggravating features significantly outweigh any mitigating features. This cannot be described in any way as a borderline case, and the appropriate order is a whole life order, and that is the order I impose in respect of counts 5 and 6. You will be imprisoned for life, and there will be a whole life order. He actually then goes on, for the other counts, in light of the seriousness of the offending and appropriate sentences on count 1 and 2 will be life sentences with a minimum term based on 2/3 of the notional determinate sentence for these offences. Those sentences will be concurrent to the whole life orders on crimes on counts 5 and 6. So basically it goes on here, but what he basically says, the judge, is he basically gives the guy 2 whole life orders and then 2 life sentences on top with a minimum count of 12 years each. So to be fair, that does actually appear to be the sentence that should be passed under English law. Now, I'll say this. I believe the only sentence that should really be passed in that case is he should be put to death. I mean, he shouldn't be in the country in the first place. He should be put to death, but he's not going to be. This is a horrific case. We've gone through it in full now, but if you want to read the full details of offending, please go to my Substack. Anyway, they're the 3 things I wanted to talk about tonight. We have 1 super chat, which I'll answer now. But if you wish to send a super chat or wish to ask me any questions, tee them up in the chat now. Chief Moody sent $5. Thank you so much. Said, hi, Mark. Hope you're doing well. Have you watched the debate between Candace Owens and Andrew Wilson? Let me just ask Google about the debate. Can you... I haven't seen it. All about the debate between Candace Owens and... what's his name? Candace Owens and Andrew Wilson. What were they actually debating? We'll soon find out. I'm just waiting for my answer. The highly anticipated live debate between Candace Owens and streamer Andrew Wilson took place on Friday the 14th of August 2026, hosted and moderated by Patrick Bet David. The clash centers on the high-profile assassination and murder. Oh, God. The primary dispute focused on whether the suspect in custody, Tyler Robinson, acted alone or was framed as a political patsy. Wilson argued that the mainstream official narrative is heavily supported by overwhelming physical and digital evidence. He pointed directly to the formal investigation, noting that Robinson allegedly confessed to the crime in text messages sent to his boyfriend shortly after the shooting. Candace Owens' position heavily contested the official narrative, publishing a multi-series part series calling Robinson a patsy. She argued that a deeper network of external actors were involved and that Robinson was set up to take the blame. The most notable breakthrough of the debate involved Owens' previous claims connecting external geopolitical forces to Kirk's death. Owens had previously alleged that hedge fund manager Bill Ackman had staged an intervention pressuring Kirk over his stances on Israel prior to his murder. Under intense pressure and cross-examination by Wilson during the live stream, Owens conceded that she possesses no direct proof that Israel was involved with the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Oh, dear. Look, I don't want to be the guy that says it wasn't Israel that did it, but as soon as I saw the that assassination, I said straight away that the person who's done that is going to be a mad troon. And lo and behold, a mad Troon was arrested. So I don't know. I'd have to watch the debate. I shouldn't think Candace Owens is great at debating. And if she admitted under scrutiny that her most important point was basically rubbish, that's unfortunate. Hazelnut 3000 gave $15 and said, thanks, Mark. Thank you so much. And does anyone have any questions? So that's the end of the Super Chats. Not many Super Chats tonight, which is fine. But Charlie Brunel says, Andrew Wilson is a Christian nationalist gatekeeper. He has never debated an ethno-nationalist. I doubt he'll ever debate me. What? Apparently, Andrew Wilson paid $300,000 to debate her. Is that true? Archie Debunker says, Rumble keeps suspending my ability to send a rant. It lasts for days, which limits streamers' income. Are you getting all donations that we send to you? I trust Rumble like I trust Nigel Farage. Well, I have received all donations so far. Obviously, it's appreciated if people can donate, and I appreciate that greatly. Somebody said, what's a mad Troon? A mad Troon is a mad tranny, a transgender goon. It is a transgender goon is abbreviated to Troon, and this was a mad Troon. So, yeah, $300,000 for a debate. Why am I not? People are getting paid this for a debate. God, I'm good at debating. I think I need to be part of this elite debating. I've not lost a debate yet, so I need to be involved in this. Anyway, if no one's got any other questions, I was willing to answer a few free questions. If anyone wants to ask me any free questions. Mark, are you hopeful for September with the case for the lads in Australia? It would be a needed white pill in the swarm of black pills. No, I'm not hopeful at all in the September case for the Australians. The reason being, I don't have faith in the legal system. I know that Tom Sewell has done an amazing amount of work. He has really, really thrown everything he's got into this. People donated a huge amount of money. And Tom did the right thing. Look, I've got to say this, right? Tom, a lot of people who fight the system legally decide to either do it themselves and it goes terribly wrong, or employ some crank who tries to find ancient laws that no longer apply to sort of defeat the legal system. Tom Sewell did it the right way. He employed the best legal representatives money can buy. People were very generous. However, I don't doubt him or his legal team. I just doubt they will get the fair hearing they deserve. And interestingly, I feel this way because the first part of this case, Tom asked for temporary relief from the judgment whilst the case is going through court. And temporary relief is usually what is granted. However, they didn't give him temporary relief, which is extremely unfair and would probably indicate that the justice system is closing ranks against him. So there you go. Anyway, thank you so much to everyone who tuned in. I hope you enjoyed the stream. I may well be back on Sunday if something comes up. If not, I'll see you on Wednesday when I've got Henrik on for Patriotic Weekly Review. Thank you to everyone. Have a lovely weekend. I am now going to get out of this heat before I melt. Thank you, everyone. I love you all. Thank you to those who donated. Good night. I'll see you again soon.